Welcome to the Creative Piano Teaching Podcast, the place where teachers from around the world meet to share innovative ideas about music education. Listen and learn as we help you motivate your students, grow your income, expand your studio, and become a more creative piano teacher.
Welcome back, everyone, to another edition of the Creative Piano Teaching Podcast. And once again, I do thank you so much for listening. It means a lot that I know there are so many people out around the world who are getting great ideas, advice, tips, and tricks to help in their piano studio from this podcast. My name is Tim Topham, and I'm the teacher behind the Creative Piano Teaching Podcast, the blog at timtopham.com, and the Inner Circle Piano Teaching Professional Development Community. This is the podcast to listen to if you are interested in teaching in a more contemporary and creative way. Each week, we explore fresh ideas for your teaching or business. We interview the most interesting and innovative music educators from around the world and give you a regular dose of creative inspiration for your studio. As usual, today's show notes and a full transcript are available for download at timtopham.com/episode78. In today's episode, we're going to be talking all about planning a piano teaching curriculum. This is something that I've been asked about many, many times, and so I've decided to put my thoughts into both writing and speech in the form of this podcast and also the blog post that I'll be releasing this month at timtopham.com. This, of course, is part of my month where we're looking at teaching beginners and planning lessons and curricula. And so that's what we're going to be focusing on today. I want to start by giving you a couple of questions that I've received from my viewers and listeners in regard to this and the kinds of questions I get asked about this, which has led to me deciding to create a theme on this month. So the first person says, "The second challenge for me is creating a really attainable curriculum for each student within the constraints of a 45-minute lesson. I've taught mainly intermediate and advanced students and now find myself struggling with beginner early years and trying to fit everything in." Now, I know this is such a common issue. I hear it regularly, both in my members area on Facebook groups and just as comments as replies on blog posts. 30 and 45 minutes is never enough time. Even an hour does leave us wanting more time. There's never enough time. And of course, there's never, ever going to be enough time when we try and do too much. And I think what we'll talk about today, I know, is one of the biggest issues is the problem around segmenting too much. So if you tend to pigeonhole the segments of your lesson, so, okay, now we're doing audio oral work, now we're doing our pieces, now we're going to move away to the away from the piano over to a bench and we're going to do some theory. And now I'm going to test your general knowledge. If you're segmenting your lesson into little pigeonholes like that, then you will never get everything done. And it's really about finding the links and the connections between things that will not only make things much more interesting for your teaching and make things more relevant for your students, but will allow you to cover more in a lesson because things are actually going to connect. So that's what I want to help you think about this month. Here's another reply that I got from one of my viewers recently. It says, "Well, generally, I love the challenges that arise from teaching piano. However, something that struck a chord, no pun intended, is your six mistakes blog post. In your six mistakes blog post," so that was a post that I wrote in 2016, "was the exam-focused approach to teaching. I've been conscious of this and tried to adapt my approach recently. I find children are more motivated to practice with an exam to focus on. So my approach fluctuates from exam prep to fun, easier pieces in between, which feels more like a roller coaster than a more structured path of development. So my issue is finding a range of fun but appropriately leveled exam pieces that children will be challenged and motivated by." So what a fantastic question. And again, another direction that I get a lot of comments regarding, and that's, what do you do if you don't teach an exam-based syllabus, particularly for teachers who are in the UK and in Australia? And I'm going to be talking about that today and also in some of the other blog posts this month, because I know this is a big issue, particularly for teachers who were brought up in a particular exam system and who now teach in exactly the same way, often using the same exam system without really thinking about whether that's the best way to approach their teaching. So that's the outline of what we're going to be talking about today. Let's get stuck into it. And I think we should actually just start with a really quick definition of curriculum. If you haven't actually come through a teaching degree, you might not actually be familiar with this word, curriculum and syllabus. And I want to give you, I guess, a direction to look at these in for the construct of today's podcast. So when we look at curriculum, the definition actually is the subjects comprising a course of study is a curriculum. So it's about the subjects, the thing that goes into an overview, a course of study. The syllabus is the name we give to the actual subjects in that course. The way I like to look at it is that a syllabus is generally, in music terms, something that is prescribed on us by an exam board or a festival committee or a competition board or something like that. That's kind of more based on a syllabus. It's like you must do this, 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 and this in order to get this. And that's great if the goal of whatever you're teaching is to pass that exam or assessment or that competition. Whether or not that's actually providing for a holistic learning journey for the student is the question, I guess, that I would have for you as a teacher. The curriculum, to me, is the more holistic way to look at music education. So what are all the things that you're doing, part of which might include an exam syllabus? What are all the things that you're doing that contributes to your students' holistic education? Really, your curriculum is going to depend on your philosophy. You know, if you're based more on a method book and you like following through a method book series, then you might not need to do that much curriculum planning because you'll move from book to book with a student, perhaps through multiple levels. I think a lot of those series go up to sort of a less level 5 book. And then you will move on to perhaps more traditional repertoire. So if you're doing that, you might be wondering why you would be even listening to this podcast, because the curriculum is pretty much laid out for you. What I'd be saying is that not every method book approach is going to suit every student. And I would question whether focusing all your activities on one method book and not doing anything else with a student is actually, again, giving them that well-rounded approach. And one thing I've got to say right from the start is, while I do like some particular method book series, and I'm going to mention a couple soon, no method book is perfect and no one method will suit every single student you've got. So we do need to have a flexible approach. Of course, I would love to also just say, right, go to my website and download the curriculum that you can use for every student. Wouldn't it be great if you could just buy ready-made syllabus, curriculum for all your students, ready-made and planned and done. Unfortunately, again, it's not how it works, because every student is different and every student will need a different approach. So one size does not fit all. However, there are some tips that I can give you in regard to planning that will work over and over again and will work for many students. So let's get to those 5 tips for planning a piano teaching curriculum right now. So my first tip is, don't reinvent the wheel. There are heaps of people in the world who have gone out and spent lots of money and lots of time creating method books that follow a curriculum that will introduce particular note reading at certain stages and progress through a sequenced series until students are competent note readers. It will also start with how to play one note and how to do a detached style of playing, and then it will introduce legato, and then it will introduce two-note slurs, and then it will do three-note slurs, and then it will combine hands together, etc., etc., etc. These things have already been written, and there's heaps of them out there. They're called method books, of course. We've been talking about them so far in the podcast. So here's a tip for you in regard to not reinventing the wheel. Go and grab 2 or 3 method books and have a look at the order in which they introduce elements of music. You'll find that even if you just look at the table of contents, you'll be able to see, okay, so one note we're introducing. Maybe it's a middle C method, so it will start with middle C and then it will add D's and B's. Maybe it's an intervallic method which would be my preference. And it starts with the intervals of seconds first, and then it moves to thirds, and it might move to fifths. It might introduce guide notes across the two staves. There are all different ways that these method books approach these things. And again, while not every method is going to suit every student, also not every method is going to suit your own teaching style. And look, mine's changed over time. My teacher taught me with the John Thompson books back when I was just a child. And I remember when I first started teaching and she'd been helping me with my approach to teaching, she helped me and get used to using the John Thompson book. But to me, that at the moment doesn't really suit my teaching style anymore. I prefer the Indivelic approach. And so I've moved on and found other things. But you've got to start somewhere, right? So grab two or three method book series, maybe ones you've heard about on this blog or other people's blogs. Just buy the first book and see how they introduce the topics that students need to learn. That is a curriculum. Maybe even write them down. Just draw three columns down a sheet and write down how each of them approach the different order. And then decide which you like the most, or combine them into a flow that works for you. So that's my tip number one. Don't reinvent the wheel. See what's already out there. Do some Googling. Do some searching. Find some method books and see what's already done. All right, my tip number two is regarding any kind of lesson plan or lesson delivery, keep flexible. You don't have to stick to a plan, even if you've got a plan. Avoid changing activities too quickly. Keep with the flow. The reason I say this is that I think when we try and do too much in piano lessons, we sometimes lose the momentum that we've got from a fantastic activity that a student is really, really enjoying, but we feel, oh, we've really got to get on and do our general knowledge, and we've got to do those oral questions because they're on my lesson plan, and well, there's exam coming up in 6 months and whatever it is, right? When something is really flowing in a lesson and a student's engaged and they're motivated, they're enjoying things, the eyes have lit up, they want to do it again and again and again, even if it's a little game, then go with it. Keep flexible. You don't have to stick dot to dot to dot dot points on your plan, okay? I'm giving you full permission. If a student's really engaged in something, then go with it for a little bit. I think the other thing is, with regard to flexibility, is have some ideas up your sleeve. And that's why when you're doing a lesson plan, particularly if you're teaching something for the first time, always make sure you've got more ideas up your sleeve than fewer. Because sometimes, you know, things won't work out the way you planned, or maybe a student won't respond as well as you thought, and you'll just need to be able to bang, bang, change. So having some ideas up your sleeve is part of that, being flexible. But please, if you've got something really fun going on in your lesson, go with it. Let the student engage and get deeper into it and really enjoy it rather than feeling like you've got to change, 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 change. Okay, curriculum planning tip number three is to actually let yourself work on the fly. Now, what I mean by this is don't be too specific when you're planning lessons. I'm going to be talking in a moment about my three segments for a comprehensive piano lesson. And I really like to keep things simple. It's a little bit like how I also like presenting or speaking to people at conferences and things. I'll have dot points, I'll have ideas that I want to cover, and then I will vamp on them. I will discuss ideas around them. I'll explore ideas around them. So while this is all about planning that curriculum and getting lessons formalized and organized, don't get too constrained. Like my tip number two, being flexible, leave yourself some leeway to invent things on the fly. Now, even if you're not feeling all that creative in your teaching, you will only sort of work out where you can get creative if you give yourself that chance, right? So by giving yourself that little bit of time to work, as I say, on the fly, around your lesson and your curriculum plan, that's when some of the creative spark will happen in your own teaching that you can then get some flow from your students on and really engage in. And you just kind of never know what will happen, all right? So don't be afraid of having a little bit of time to work on the fly. All right, tip number four. Don't think separately. I mentioned this in the introduction. And unfortunately, method books are a little bit unhelpful here because a number of method books will have, you know, five or six different books for each level. You'll have the repertoire book, the Christmas book, the technique book, the theory book. And this almost encourages us to do that pigeonholing that I think is actually not a good way to structure a lesson. We want to interlink things. We want to find connections and relatedness. So even though method books might be in separate parts, think holistically. Don't think separately. Anything can form part of sight reading. So a student that's learning a new piece of music could perhaps do a little bit of sight reading of a few bars of a number of pieces in the same key as the piece they're learning. You might find that the piece of music they're about to learn has a lot of fifths in the left hand, so they could do some sight reading of fifths in the left hand. Think of ways that you can connect things. So connecting, for that example, connecting the sight reading into the music that they're actually about to learn, using it as a prerequisite almost to actually learning the piece of music. Again, creativity can be related to just about anything that's going on. If you're learning a piece that has a left-hand simple walking bass, boom, 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 then maybe the student could just improvise, maybe even on one or two notes in the right hand, something really simple along to that bass line, even if you play the bass line. Think about these ways that you can get creative. Could they sing that bass line back to you? Maybe that could be your oral component. Could you talk briefly about some famous blues players? Maybe that is your general knowledge component. So think about how you can relate things together. Try and avoid segmenting. That's my tip number four. And my tip number five is, we mentioned it before, whatever you do, don't use an exam board as your syllabus for teaching. It's not the intention of the exam board, and they say it. I interviewed, if you're interested at all, I interviewed the heads of a number of exam boards around the world on my podcast. You can head to timtopham.com/podcast. You'll be able to find those episodes, or just search for it on my blog. Search for ABRSM or AMEB. They all said that the exam board is not a syllabus. It's not designed to form the basis of what you teach. It's designed to make clear the requirements for an assessment. Okay, so think a little bit wider and more broadly about the kinds of things you can do in lessons. And I'm going to help you as much as I can on this blog because I'm really passionate about helping people use the exam boards for what their purpose is, which is a fantastic way to assess students. You can do so much more in lessons, though, in addition to the kinds of things you cover in an exam board syllabus. Okay, so they're my five tips, but that's not the end of the episode because I want to actually give you some more concrete ideas about the kinds of things that you can do with students at three stages of learning. One is beginners. One is late beginners and early intermediate students. So they're the kids that are out of their method books or, you know, have done maybe one or two levels of a book and are moving on to being able to read more generally. And thirdly, your late intermediate and advanced students. And I want to talk about some things we can do to help guide your curriculum for each of those. I'm going to finish off then with some technology that can also help you. So let's just talk about beginners firstly. For the start, as many of you will know, I don't use a method book or any method book at all, actually, at the beginning. I do something which I call my no book beginners. And it's an approach that I use that for about 10 weeks of a new beginner coming to start lessons with me, I won't look at do any reading or any method book stuff. It's all creative and it's all about movement and singing and rhythm and tapping and having fun exploring the piano and exploring music. And depending on when you're listening to this podcast, I'm actually creating and releasing my course called Notebook Beginners. It's just an approach. I don't call it a method. It's just an approach to teaching those first 10 weeks or thereabouts of a new beginner to really engage and inspire them in their music making journey that's ahead. So look out for that. Depending on when you're listening to this podcast, do a search on my blog if you haven't already for Notebook Beginners. And I know you'll find that a real treat in your teaching if you've never tried it before. Some other ideas for beginners too. You could, and in fact, for all your students, you could theme a term or base activities around seasons or holidays. Maybe you have a lead up to Christmas or a Halloween one. Maybe, you know, something around Easter. So that gives you another kind of framework for giving you activities and ideas that you might not have had originally with when you're focusing only on a method book, for example. Whatever method book you choose too, I always use it as a starting place and I add in creative ideas and extra music. It is very rare that I would ever solely use a method book and nothing else for a student. In fact, I don't think I've ever done it. Even if you're just on the side doing some rhythm activities or helping the student learn a song that they've heard on the radio or you know, picking out a tune by ear, whatever it is, try and keep adding in extra activities as you go. Even if it's a little bit difficult at the start, it will get easier the more you explore this and the more ideas you start to get up your sleeves for how you can take some of those ideas perhaps from the method book and explore and expand them. As I said before too, no method book is perfect. My suggestions, if you're interested in what I like for various groups, if you've got young beginners, then I really love Piano Safari, and you can actually have a listen to episode 71 of this podcast where I interviewed the writers of the Piano Safari method about how they've come about, what they do, and what the method's all about. It is a great way to start young beginners. If you haven't checked it out, do check it out, pianosafari.com. If you've got teen or adult beginners, then the thing you must be careful of is that the method book you use, if you are choosing to use a method, doesn't have lots of childish kind of pictures in it, because it can be a real turnoff for particularly teenage students. So in this regard, I quite like Piano Pronto, which you can find a link to in the show notes. The Accelerated Piano Adventures by the Fabers, I think, is good. And for those kids who you want to introduce more of a chordal approach to, then I found out last year at the MTNA a series called Way Cool Keyboarding, and we'll pop a link to that in the show notes as well. So there's some of my suggestions for methods for beginners. But again, supplement it, use different things, or maybe use a combination of those things together. I think that's how we come about a real creative and inclusive and holistic approach to music education. Okay, so let's check out the late beginners and the early intermediates. So these are the students that they know how to read music, but have kind of passed on from a method book series. And this is where I think you really need to consider the three segments of a comprehensive piano lesson. And I actually released a blog about this, so we'll pop a link to that in the show notes and you can read more about it at the blog. I won't go into too much detail except to say that my three segments, the three things that I try and cover in every lesson is, well, could you guess them? What do you think? What do you think if you had to zoom out and look at a lesson without looking at the minutiae of, okay, I'm going to do oral work here and general knowledge and all that kind of stuff. What are the three areas that you would cover in a lesson? Have a think about it. My three are, compare it to yours, technique, creativity, and repertoire. So I want my students to be improving their technique. By the time they've got to late beginner stage, they're starting to learn scales. We're starting to get some agility in their fingers and move around the piano and that sort of thing. So keeping the technique going is important. I really love finding a crossover between technical work and creative work. And one of the easiest ways to do that is to use scales as a way of improvising in the right hand while the left hand is perhaps playing a chord or keeping some kind of harmony going. Another approach for technique at this level is that you could follow the technical requirements for an exam syllabus of some sort. Just be careful, again, that you don't follow the whole syllabus for everything. But to link your students up to an approximate level of an exam board system, I don't have anything, don't see anything wrong with that, because I think that does then give them a sequenced approach and it allows them to progress along. And it means that, you know, if at some stage down the track you would like your student or your student would like to try out and do an exam, then they've got the technical ability at that level that has progressed up. So that's one or two ideas for technical work. For creative, look, that's what my whole blog's about. So get on the blog and search for, you know, anything to do with chords or improvising or blues or any of those kinds of things. My members area, I've got heaps more ideas around creative piano teaching. That's where all of my courses are, all of my lesson plans, all that kind of stuff. So if you're interested in membership and you haven't checked it out yet, head to timtopham.com/community. And finally, repertoire. One of the questions I get asked most is where to find good repertoire. If you're not going to use a method book, where do you find it? Well, as you know, or you may know, I've started doing fortnightly repertoire wraps. These are Facebook Live videos, and we'll pop a link in the show notes as well to these. Every fortnight, I'll come online and show you some great ideas for repertoire that you might not have found recently and give you all the links to them. So it's a dead easy way to find some new music that is suited to your students. Another question I get asked about repertoire at this late beginner and early intermediate stage is, what do you actually teach? How do you teach these pieces, particularly if it's not something you've done before? So in that regard, I don't have time to cover it here, but I'm actually setting aside podcast episode number 81. That's in 2 weeks' time, where I'll be showing you what I do with elements and activities around music. So how do we pull them apart? How do we prime students for the things that they're going to need to learn in these new pieces and give them some really creative, exciting activities around them before they actually start learning them. It's a great episode and it's coming up. It's going to be number 81. Stay tuned for that. And of course, as well, by the late beginner, early intermediate stage, students should be starting to put their hand up and perhaps have some say in what they're going to be learning if they haven't been doing that already. So what does the student like playing? Can you help them pick out a song that they like listening to on the radio or that they hear their parents listening to? Ask them, you know, what would you like to learn? What are you listening to on your iPhone at the moment? Perhaps you could introduce some composing ideas at this stage too as a regular part of lessons, and maybe covering some ideas around lead sheets or pop songs. These are all things that you can now start including at this late beginner, early intermediate stage, leading into stage 3, which is the late intermediate and advanced stage. Now, for the most part, I'm not going to talk too much about this because curriculum by that stage generally is based around repertoire and advancing levels of repertoire. But look, again, it depends on what the student's doing. I've had plenty of students who want my help in doing composition at this kind of level. So I can think of a student that I took on who'd already performed very high level, grade 8 or above, AMUS even, AMUS-A diploma kind of level, and he was now looking for help with playing more popular music and composing. So we were doing harmonization, improvisation, all of this kind of stuff, and that he was an advanced level student. So, you know, it's harder to set a curriculum at this level because it's going to depend on the aspirations and the goals of the student. Maybe they are sitting high-level exams for school or trying to get a scholarship or get into university. So that's going to determine the kinds of things you do. But as you know, I wouldn't be me without saying try and keep some creative aspect in those lessons if you possibly can and if the student wants to. Okay, so let's finish up today. I hope this has been helpful. I did mention that some technology that might help. I was just looking at my notes here. Google Docs can be a great way to help with your curriculum planning because one of the things that it does, Google Docs and Google Sheets and things, can be very easily shared with students and teachers, other teachers in your studio, students, parents, and it's all shared in the one document. You don't have to email things backwards and forwards. It's one of the best time savers I've ever found. I use Google Docs all the time. If you're interested in finding out how to get more productive using some of these tech features, then head to timtopham.com/events, because I've actually got a free training there all about productivity using Google Docs and a couple of task and planning tools too. So do check that out. There are also a number of apps that can help you with your lesson planning because they sync in with students and what they're doing and parents and all this kind of stuff. We've got Practicia, of course. We'll put a link to that. I know Sam, the developer of that, quite well, and that's just getting better and better as he develops and releases new features. There are other practice and organization apps that you might be interested in too. And things like My Music Staff and Music Teachers Helper. And there's a discount for Music Teachers Helper for all my Inner Circle members. Even if you are already using it, you can still get a discount on it. They are two bits of software that I can also recommend that can help you with planning and organizing your studio and things like your curriculum. But look, stay tuned this month because I'm going to be giving away my lesson planning sheets in a blog post very, very soon. It's going to be a free download and it's going to be split into two things. One is a quarterly planning document. So this is great for term by term here in Australia or just every quarter or thereabouts, wherever you are in the world. And also weekly lesson plans for each student. And it's all going to be based on my concept of this three segments of a comprehensive piano lesson. The other thing that we're going to be doing is pulling apart how you teach pieces at that late beginner, early intermediate and onward stage. So really focusing on what the piece is made of, what ingredients have gone into it, and how that can determine what activities you do with it. This is based on the simultaneous learning work of Paul Harris, who's been a guest on my blog and the podcast a few times. And we're going to cover that in podcast episode number 81 with a one-page cheat sheet that you can use for any piece of music that you teach, and you can actually reuse it over and over again. So I hope that is going to be really, really helpful for you. So they were my five tips for planning a piano teaching curriculum and a few extra ideas, of course, there. You can grab a full transcript and the show notes and all the links that we've talked about today if you head to timtopham.com/episode78. Next week, I'm very, very excited that we have Amy Greer on the podcast. Amy has put together a great book with Alfred's all about rote teaching. So we're going to be talking about rote teaching, which is a topic really close to my heart when it comes to beginners. And it's one of the reasons I really love the Piano Safari method. So stay tuned next week. Episode 79 is with Amy Greer, and we're going to be talking all about rote teaching. Until then, have a great time in your studios, and I look forward to hearing what you think about this whole idea of planning a teaching curriculum.
We'll conclude this evening's entertainment.
Oh, thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Creative Piano Teaching Podcast. We'd love to help take your teaching to the next level as a member of our supportive community. Use the coupon Piano Podcast for $100 off an annual membership of Tim's Inner Circle today. To find out more, head to timtopham.com/community.